ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Tom Izzo, Kurt Warner, Jesse Rogers. Greatly appreciate all of you calling in. Be back for you tomorrow at 9 a.m. We got MLS soccer back, if that means something to you.
It means a lot to Freddie Huebner, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely
much.
Right, it does.
I'm glad it's coming back.
Their commissioner, Don Garber, just said, yep, we're back. We worked it out with the players. We will lose $1 billion.
$1 billion for the MLS? Wow.
Yes.
Well, places like Seattle, Atlanta, where the fans are over the moon for those teams. You know, mm-hmm. I think they do okay here. They were supposed to move back to Soldier Field this year. Remember that.
You're right.
This was the big move back
their
downtown.
Owner, didn't he pay like $65 million to get out of the deal in Bridgeview?
I believe he did, yes. That's Joe Mansueto, who's got lots of money. So $65 ain't that
Northwest
much.
Northwest Indiana guy, too.
That's right.
Way.
He is a Northwest
Indiana
guy.
Is he married to Sofia Vergara?
I don't think so.
What's the name of that guy?
I don't know.
It's close.
It's definitely not the guy who owns the Fire. He's got enough going for him. Does he really need to be married to Sofia Vergara, too? My God. You know, he's worth like $3 billion. So
hold on a minute.
Yeah, he was able to say, okay, we'll pay to get out of it.
Joe Manganiello. Sorry.
Close. That's not even remotely close.
I don't know who that guy is, but I'm assuming he's handsome if he's married to Sofia Vergara.
He is handsome.
He's got to be a looker.
Yep, he is. So
good for the MLS for coming back. What do those players make, though? I mean, if you're Zlatan, you know, he's not in the league anymore. I know that
would be,
but like,
Ibrahimovic.
Yeah, like if you're, you know, who else? Because Wayne Rooney playing in the MLS still? Wasn't he?
No, Wayne's gone.
He is gone?
Yeah.
But, I mean, those guys got
Ibrahimovic is gone.
Yeah. Like, those guys got a big payday. But what does the average MLS player make?
I'll tell you.
I think you take a look at it. You know, besides the international.
That's what I mean.
Exemption that they can have. Oh, you're probably looking at about $100K.
That's kind of what average. I was going to guess. Are you making a couple hundred grand?
The
maybe?
Average base salary in 2019 for an MLS player.
Minus the international players.
Right.
$345,867.
Okay, so no, you're saying no.
13% over the previous year with double-digit growth across the roster.
But their expenses aren't that high. Are they really losing $1 billion?
That's on the 690 players under contract.
Wow. All right. Well,
there you go.
A little bit of a skeptic at that number.
That does seem a little bit high. I would have thought it was a little bit lower than that. But all right.
Can I tell you? I can only read you what I found.
That's what you're doing. You're 100% correct.
Correct. What did you think about Jesse's exclusive with Tom Ricketts?
It's good for Jesse for getting the sit down with him. I mean, it's stuff we've heard, you know, it's the same kind of rhetoric. The owners just say, no, you don't understand. We don't have any money. I don't believe that. You want to talk about things. I don't believe that they don't have any money or that they can't just assume some losses this year. So it's going to be a bad year for them. Okay. He sort of admits that they operate in the world as this is all about how your asset appreciates. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be great appreciation, as there already has been for Tom Ricketts and for many MLB owners. There will continue to be appreciation once things get back to normal. So I just don't believe that they can't survive by taking a loss this year, that they have to have the players bail them out. I just simply do not believe it. I don't believe they're as poor as they want everybody to believe. That I just have a hard time thinking. I have a hard time accepting that.
Tom doesn't buy it.
No.
Said there's a manipulation of the numbers.
I just do not. Are they hoarding cash? Are they sitting on the billions in liquidity that they're valued at? No, I understand that they're not. But it's not the players' responsibility right now to bail them out. I just don't think it is.
I've got their sport track stuff here. Now, you got to be careful with average salary. Like I said, you got to take the Europeans out of it.
Yes.
Schweinsteiger, $5.6 million. Right?
Bastian Schweinsteiger makes how much?
$5.6 million.
He's a big star.
Gaetan, $2.197 million. Nemanja Nikolic, $1.9 million. It's last year. Alexander Katai, international player. By the way, the big ones right now have been international players. $1.38 million. Marcelo Ferrari, 775. And then you start getting down to 700, 600, 450, 550, 475, 70,000, 80,000, 135, 140, 87,000. Supplemental roster, 70,000, 70,000, 70,000. Reserve roster, 56,000, 57, 56, 60,000, 95,000, 111,000. So the international players are still getting paid the crux of everything.
Yes,
they are. I think Bastian Schweinsteiger makes as much as the rest of the team.
It sounds like he might. Yeah. He's awfully close to making as much as the rest of the team.
That's I had no idea.
Yeah, so, yeah. He was a big star for them.
Like I said, if you take the international players out,
yeah,
which they've got designated aside, what's the highest paid American player playing in the MLS? Which is the reason they're playing in Europe. I think that's the whole point. So that's fine. Hopefully the fellas are up. They're running. They're playing. Hopefully the Chicago Fire can make the playoffs for the first time in a long time.
Yes.
So we'll see. But I figured the Cappy's number that he found, and I'm sure it's the correct number, if you include all the salaries.
Right.
Boy, those international guys.
Take out the
guys,
international.
So if they make the playoffs, will Sofia Vergara be at the game?
I don't think so.
It's not going to happen.
I love how you thought that was the guy. That's phenomenal.
I didn't think it was. I just thought I'd ask. Did you read the Shams Charania?
I heard you read it.
Hawks and Bulls ownership group said on the call with the league they both want to return, but several players and staffers throughout both organizations
Atlanta Hawks.
Yes.
I suppose the Bulls management would like to, because I think they really want to convince AK to keep Boylan, I guess. And so, but let's play so that AK can get to like him. I'm assuming that's why they would want to play. Why else would they want to play?
Because they have money coming from NBC Sports Chicago. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, too.
Trust me.
How many games are left? I mean, what are we talking about?
To get their money, they'd have to play another 7 games.
And how much are we talking about? Do we know?
The league's going to play 8. So that would get them to that point.
Yeah. I'm told it's a significant check.
Significant. How could that be for 8 games? What could it possibly be? $100 million?
No, of course. What's
significant? Is it a million? Are you going to tell me that's significant?
No. Because the Cubs and the White Sox in the last deal, which just ended, now it's a new business.
Yeah.
They were making, I want to say, $750,000 a game.
All right. So I'm sure the
new deal has got to be $1 million a game.
Do the Bulls stand, $8 million? Is that significant? $8 million?
You got no revenue coming from other sources and you just brought in
maybe
8 new executives.
Well, I think it's twofold. I think it's that, and I think they'd love for AK to fall in love with Jim Boylan.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I think that deal's done.
I think Michael Reinsdorf really wants to keep Jim Boylan.
I don't believe that at all.
Who's your guy you have taken over as
Emi Udoka from the Sixers.
Yeah, that could be.
Emi Udoka?
Yeah. Well, and you got the Eversley connection.
Correct.
And everything like that. Yeah, absolutely.
I do not believe.
No? I hope you're right.
Yeah. I do not believe.
Michael Reinsdorf, for some reason, really likes Jim Boylan.
He likes him as a guy.
I don't get it.
He told,
I've heard he likes him more than that.
He told Arturis the day he interviewed him, if you want to move on to coach,
I believe that, but I think he, deep down, I think that he was sort of hoping.
You cannot possibly watch that team play and go, we should keep that guy.
I like the announcement that you made it earlier. You said that it's going to happen at the end of the league year, but there was a possibility it could happen before. And there's a possibility it could happen after.
No, what I said
I was like, oh my heavens, from what I think they're going to pay. What's Cap saying?
They're going to pay Emi Udoka in Philly till his deal's up June 30.
Right.
The Bulls, it can't just be keep writing
checks.
Philly's
going to the playoffs, though. I mean.
Correct, but his contract expires June 30 is what I'm hearing.
Okay.
So
how does that work, though, with the season now spilling into August? You know what I mean? Like, what happens?
Right. They may say, I will let you. He's an assistant, so they may let him go.
Yeah, but still, I mean, the Sixers are going to be in the playoffs. Are they going to say goodbye to an assistant coach? I can't imagine that happens.
Right?
This is like a weird circumstance, isn't it?
Because
are the Sixers really going to let
the league year's going to start?
Right.
Your contract's up. Boom.
Well, I understand that June 30th under normal circumstances. Yeah, if you're coming out of contract, you're done June 30th.
Like, these guys are going to be playing until October.
They have paid everyone. They haven't furloughed any employees,
right?
The Reinsdorfs.
Right.
They are writing checks. Now they went and got Arturis.
They have to pay off Gar. He's got at least two more years left. Yeah. They got to pay off Boylan. Yeah. They brought in Eversley. They brought in Polk. They brought in Connolly.
Yeah, Tim Connolly, right? Yeah.
They are going to overhaul the coaching staff. Like, they just keep writing checks. Keep they got nothing checks. Coming in.
Good. Jerry's got enough money. Go ahead.
I don't disagree with you. But when you can get a little bit.
So, yeah, that's interesting. Like, what if they want to hire somebody that's out, like, how does that work on a play? I don't know. That's very strange.
It is.
It's going to be a weird summer, man.
Right. Like, that's I got work to do in summer. Chicago. No, I need you to be here for practice. Like,
if the NBA or the NHL ever decide to actually play games, that'd be exciting.
I think they will.
Decision to play them. I'm talking about when they actually decide to play.
I think they will. I mean, we're still like a,
we're coming back
6 weeks away.
We'll see you in August.
We'll see you after the 4th of
coming
July.
Coming back, but like, we'll see you in August.
I can't believe it. We still have to wait till August.
Keep let it run into the NFL.
Well, I guess they don't have a choice, Yerk. I don't know that they have a, honestly.
Okay.
To Yerk's point, how are the European soccer leagues up and running and ready to go then?
Thank you. If the plan is in place,
why do they need two more months to get to that point?
Thank you.
Are they getting all...
Soccer, European soccer said, okay, guys, 2 weeks. Get up to fitness, go play.
Playing.
Yeah, I know, but the Premier League gave their players two weeks.
In La Liga, I think, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it 2 weeks for La Liga and for the Premier League? I don't know. Are there regulations that are different here? Are the
regulations?
I don't know.
I'm saying what regulations?
Like Florida's open. They're going to play in Florida. You go.
That's
play in
why
Florida.
They're going into Florida.
Yeah,
yeah.
But for, like for the NHL, they want to do Chicago as a host city potentially. Do they even know if Chicago would allow it? That's what I mean. Well, don't pick Chicago then.
Yeah, that's obvious.
You can't go to Canada, right? Because you can't travel.
Right. And you're going to have to do it in the United States because you're going to have to bring all the players to the United States.
Right.
Then wherever you decide to do it, or whatever cities you decide to do it in, you're going to have to make a decision that A, they're open. You know,
it does seem for the NHL especially like, wait, you've announced, like you voted on this, you're cool, you're ready to go, like you're going to play when? July 31st? It's like what?
What the hell are you waiting for?
Why do we have to wait till July 31st?
Now, if you wait 14 days to get somebody into the country, like they get here and you got to wait 14 days, which I think they say now is 11.
Yeah,
11 days to be able to do that. And then you have 2 weeks of training camp to get the guys in the shape.
3 weeks. Oh, yeah. That's a month, I get right?
Yeah. Now you're looking at a month.
But, I mean, you know.
What are we waiting for?
Why are
32
waiting?
Days, 33
right.
days.
Right.
What are you waiting for?
Don't know.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw a lack of social distancing all across the country here in the last week or so.
I agree.
Am I wrong or am I wrong?
No.
Okay.
Well, people were wearing masks.
Well, that's it. So it's just a mask. And
put your mask on, all right?
No. Either way, the point is we'll see in 2 weeks whether anything happens or not. Right? 2 weeks? 14 days gestation period? See if there's a mass rush of people heading to hospitals that need ventilators?
Yeah.
Right? Is that what we're talking about, this theoretical pandemic?
It's not theoretical.
I'm just saying.
Is
it still here?
Like 100, over 100,000
people. Is it still here? Is it still here?
I'm leaving.
Is it still here?
I don't know.
That's what I'm asking. And I said what? In 21 days? Will you find out in 21 days?
I suppose.
I imagine we will.
Okay.
I imagine you have
to. I don't disagree with you there, but don't call it a theoretical pandemic.
Well,
it's not theoretical.
It's a theory.
No, it's not.
Is it an epidemic? Is it a pandemic?
Don't they have a certain number that they use to distinguish what
a
pandemic is?
Okay. I'm asking questions. I'm asking questions.
Come on. I mean...
So I do. I like to ask questions. Yeah, I like to ask a lot of questions.
You like to cause trouble. You like to stir the pot.
All over. That's right. I do like to stir the pot. There's been a lot of pot stirring going on.
I do wonder, though, why it has to take
he
like
likes to smoke
weeks.
It, too.
Yes,
there's a whole lot of pot stirring going on.
It was surprising to read the NHL. Like, yep, we're good. We'll see you on August 1st. It was like, wait, what? August 1st?
Right.
And then you told me
like the Premier League said we'll be like, back August 1st. I'm like, all right, they're coming back on the 17th, and I'm like, watching Bundesliga.
Hockey's back. We've agreed.
So
we'll see you on August 1st.
Before you leave. So the reason I think there is a little bit of a delay, I'm thinking they're hoping to get fans in there. That's what they're hoping for.
And the soccer leagues have said, forget it. We're not playing with fans.
They're not. But NASCAR's coming back with fans now, so they're going to start coming back in 2-3 weeks. They're going to have fans there. How many fans they decide to let in there, we're going to find out. It's outdoors, though, so it's a little bit of different.
So that's what it comes down to. They want to wait for the fans?
If you wait eight, no, I'm asking the question. I'm not telling you that's what they're waiting for.
It could be.
But if they start letting fans in and everything's good and then the strain, as they say in Europe, is weakened, okay? They're saying it's weakened in Europe, okay? This little bite back that was supposed to happen with the pandemic and with the COVID-19, it's been weakened. It hasn't been the same. It hasn't been as strong as they thought it was going to be. It isn't causing the issues they thought it was going to cause over in Europe.
Yeah, but you just had, I think, the Yomi Uri Giants,
good news.
Lions had to cancel because guys tested positive.
But that's because guys on the team, though, tested positive. I think Yurko's talking about the broader numbers, like the large data sample is not as bad as they thought.
Right.
Right.
That's what they're saying in Europe right now. So you watch what's happening.
Maybe they're waiting for fans. I mean, look,
Tottenham. Listen, Tottenham had a positive test they released today. They said, we got one guy that's positive.
So what do they do with him? He goes into quarantine.
Yeah. Then they observe and take an eye on everybody.
They just keep testing the players.
Yeah. That's where you're at.
And then golf's back next week. I mean, but again, I guess these sports where they're not allowing the fans in are
saying. Have you played yet?
Not yet.
I know that guy's played like 38 rounds
already. Merkin snuck out again yesterday for 9 holes. You know, these guys.
Playing with some youths.
Playing with 2 12-year-olds.
Friday with my son.
Nice.
Good.
The bright man and I are going to play.
I'll play. I don't know when I'm going to play. I'll play at some point, but I have not.
Spank the ball around.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yep.
I'll be playing all weekend. I got a Thursday, usually the league, and then Saturday and Sunday I'll be out there slapping that little white ball around.
Last time I played with Yurk, it was up north.
Desert Mountain, I thought. No. Bobolink.
Bobolink. Was that last time? Yeah. Well, we were all together last year at Stonewall. I don't think we were in the same group.
No, we weren't in the same group. Yurk and I were in the same group. We had
good times.
So, all right, out of here. Back tomorrow at 9 a.m. The Carmen and Yurko Experience is next.
See you tomorrow.
Get Carmen and Yurko pods on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Chicago starting to open back up, which is a good sign. Things starting to calm down a little bit, which is also good. Mostly peaceful protests around the city and around the country last night, which is so much better. Starting to get back to normal a little bit here, Yurk. It's Carmen and Yurko. Dave McMenamin will join us in about 45 minutes to talk about the NBA and this new proposal. McMenamin wrote a good story about the league trying to find a way to, or the teams that are in the playoffs anyway, and these teams that are going to be the high seeds, trying to find out a way to get some of their home court advantage back, which in the NBA is quite significant. Maybe not as much in the other sports in order. In the North American sports, it goes NBA, NFL, NHL, and MLB. But the real dramatic ones that we see historically are in the NBA especially, and then a little bit to a slightly lesser extent in the NFL. And it's very important for NBA teams in the postseason, where your home court advantage historically goes up to about 64, you know, about a winning percentage that equates to about 64%. Yeah, so it's quite significant.
Is there anything that you can do that would help do anything in that regard? You got no fans. The home court advantage doesn't come from the fact that you're playing on a floor that you're familiar with. It comes with the fact that the energy in the building is going to help you pull through any tough situation.
I think you're right. In about 90% of any home court advantage, or maybe 80%, let's say, of any home court advantage, Eric, is what you just said. Maybe 10% or slightly more has got to do with some ref bias that happens. And, you know, the fans are closest to the officials.
Right.
They're closest to the action in the NBA. Maybe that's why we see it. There's maybe some small percentage in the fact that they know the bounces of their hardwood the most. It's funny that you say, could that actually matter? Do you know that some teams have suggested, McMenamin wrote about this, the higher seeded teams are able to transport their actual hardwood home court from their arenas to Orlando to try to preserve the feel of their home playing experience. So that's actually been thought of by some of the teams and some of the executives.
And I don't think anything will come of, and not that it'll come of that. I don't think it provides anything for you.
Didn't they always say the Boston Garden was funky and the old Garden?
Right.
Like the Celtics players had
some
advantage.
Dead spots.
Because they knew,
where the dead spots were at, here's the only thing I think you can do. The home team, the team that's supposed to have home court advantage gets an extra half a point every basket. I mean, if we're going to be realistic, what is it the NBA can do for the home court advantage? That's it. There is nothing that you can do that's going to give a home team an advantage in this situation when everybody's playing at a neutral site. Period. You want to, you know, extra timeouts is in this thing.
Yeah, right.
Extra challenges. This and that. Unless you're giving them an extra half a point, you're really not doing anything. So
does it just make you feel better? I don't know.
It could make the home team feel better.
I think you're right. How about
your water bottles are twice the size of the other team's water bottles?
You've got more Gatorade.
We could come up with all the dumb things we want to think of, but there's nothing that's going to be a unique situation this year.
Yeah.
It's going to be different. You can't replicate home court advantage, and you can write 1,000 columns about it. Nothing's going to happen, and nothing's going to work.
The advantage does truly exist in the kind of energy that's happening in and around the playing surface. And again, in the NBA, you're closer to the action than in any other sport. There are fans right there on, you know, courtside, even encroaching on the baselines now. They've overtaken the scorer's table. I mean, the scorer's table used to run, you know, one end of the sideline from baseline to baseline used to be the coaches and the players and the scorer's table. I mean, they've put, like, you know, if you're the 12th man on the roster or the third assistant coach, you're sitting behind fans these days, you know. So the action is truly, the fans are truly on top of the action. And that's really where the home court advantage exists, because the players thrive off that energy. But most importantly, there seems to be some real bias amongst officials, and not that they're doing it in a malicious way or with any specific intent, or that the game is rigged, or that LeBron James has to get to a seventh game or anything like that. It's just they're close to these animated, sometimes agitated, passionate fans, and there is certainly some data out there that supports the notion that they're calling fouls based on the energy they're feeling around them. That's your true home court advantage in the NBA. None of this will truly replicate that.
Can't be replicated. It won't be.
Oh, look,
you can try. Look, it's our floor. Yay! Not going to work.
Here's some of the stuff they talked about. The higher seed being awarded the first possession of the second, third, and fourth quarters following the traditional jump ball. So if you win the jump ball, you could start each quarter, I guess, right, with possession of the basketball.
Yeah, if you win the jump ball, yeah, because you'll get the ball first the whole time. But does it matter, or does it even out over the course of the game?
Yeah, stuff like that probably.
I heard Chris say, Chris, did you say that, like, in football, when you control the possession at the half?
Yeah.
Or a 2-1 in basketball would be the situation. But the key in the NFL, depending upon how much time is left in the clock, if you've got 4 minutes left on the clock, you want to be able to control it the final four, score points, then get the ball back at the beginning. Now you're talking maybe 7 to 9 minutes of time possession you had at both halves. With the halftime, that's about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Now you're looking at something real where that offense for the other team has stayed off the field.
Yep.
Because possessions are so quick in basketball, you know, can you steal one or two? But I think over the course of a game, you'll come and you'll find out that evens out no matter what.
Probably the only time you're really using that to your advantage, like Chris was saying earlier, would be
it's two to one.
Two for one.
It's under a minute. Basically,
I mean, that's it.
If you have the ball under a minute, you can manipulate getting
so
the ball back.
So you can get 2 for 1 and the first one in the next quarter, which would give you 3 out of 4possessions.
So it would be a three for one.
So it'd be 3 for 1.
So then I worry. I just wonder over the course of 48 minutes, do the possessions end up equaling out anyway?
Yeah.
Without putting turnovers in the factor when you piddle the ball away for no reason at all.
Right, which is certainly part of it, though.
Sure, absolutely. The more possessions you have, the more ability you have to turn the ball over, right?
Absolutely.
Or to score points.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that can happen during that crazy possession.
They also have in here the higher-seeded team being allowed to designate one player to be able to be whistled for 7 fouls instead of 6.
See, that's a little bit different.
Out.
Yeah, a little bit different. And there'd be guys that – who's the guy that would get the foul – and then, like, Della Dova would come over and say, it's on me. Every player, J.R. Smith.
Yeah.
LeBron would hack somebody, and then J.R. Smith would go, it's me, right here, on me. And then the ref would look at LeBron and say, yes, foul on number 8, Della Dova. So it's not like it's going to matter for the superstars of the game anyway.
Oh,
they don't get the fouls called on them anyway. They once called a foul on a guy on a bench. How do you get that number? He's on the bench, for heaven's sake.
It's like sometimes when they call the wrong guy for holding, you know. It's like, wait a minute, that wasn't him. The one I chuckled at most here was an off-court feature in which playoff teams, in order of seeding 1 through 16, receive first choice on picking which hotel they'll stay at ESPN's Wide World of Sports Complex in the Disney World Resort.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad theory, Ken.
That's awesome.
There are some real nice places down there.
Like the Grand Floridian is
it's beautiful.
Really nice, right? You've stayed there.
I have stayed there.
That's where, if you're the Bucks, you want to stay at the Grand Floridian.
But remember, that's also close to where that little kid got snatched by the alligator.
Yeah, that's right, by the alligator.
What a terrible thing that was, man. So you got to be careful. There's a lot of nice places out there and around there, but there are some that are like 1,000 years old compared to some of the newer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you'd rather find the newer facility to be able to stay in and play in and have a good time in.
Yeah, these guys are used to like the Four Seasons and stuff like that, you know? They get first-class travel.
They need
Not everybody's going to stay in the nicest hotel. Yeah, you need the big extended bed.
I can stay on a 6.5, 7-foot bed.
How does Giannis sleep? Yeah. Like, you know,
he's got to have an extendo bed.
So they request those hotels. I mean, I've never been
sleep
in a hotel.
Diagonal. What do you do?
What do you do if you're Giannis? What if you do if you're Shaq? How do you sleep in the bed at the hotel? Do they have extended beds in hotels?
I don't know.
I've never walked into a hotel and said, oh, this must be a room where some NBA players stay because it's an extended bed. No, it's just a queen-size bed or a king-size bed. Giannis can't fit on a regular bed.
No. It's a big man.
Oh, we got breaking news.
This is breaking news.
Oliver Miller
on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
What do we got, boys?
All right, gentlemen, this is per Ken Rosenthal.
Baseball news.
Baseball.
MLB rejected the union's proposal for a 114-game season.
No shot.
And said it would not send a counter, sources tell The Athletic. The league said it has started talks with owners about playing a shorter season without fans and that it is ready to discuss additional ideas with the union.
Okay, so they're not going to counter it, but they're going to discuss, right? And then a new plan will be presented at some point?
Sounds like that.
Yeah, a shorter season.
It's also petty.
Maybe that 50-game season that they're talking about.
50-game season. The players might have to take that and just be okay with it and move on.
Or they might just say the hell with it. We're fine.
Jeez.
Or they'll just say the hell with it. We're fine.
Tom Ricketts was again talking about the finances. We'll get into some of that next. He spoke to Jesse Rogers at ESPN.com, and we'll read some of the highlights from Jesse's article that was posted last night. Thoughts on the NBA's plan to return, if you like the idea, if you think that they should build in some advantage for the top seeds to reclaim a little bit of that home court advantage that they're going to be missing, and how can you really do that when you're playing at a neutral site? 312-332-3776. Anyone that still wants to talk about the events of the last week or so, feel free. We're here for you like we have been the last couple of days. You can hit us up on Twitter at Yurko64. That's Yurko with the J. I'm at Carmen DeFalco. 312-332-ESPN is the number. We'll be right back.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Carmen and Yurko with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Remember, we're on Twitch, twitch.tv, search ESPN 1000 Chicago. Yurko's back in the studio, so you can see both of us. Waddle will be back in about a week and a half. Speaking of Waddle, Waddle and Sylvie, we'll cross talk with the guys later today. And I got an email alert yesterday, Yurk, that my Sylvie Strong shirt from Obvious Shirts is on its way.
Oh.
So I can't wait for that.
For you.
I did go with the medium.
Oh, I'm not
because
surprised.
You know my motto, Yurko. Don't do steroids, just buy smaller shirts.
That's right. Girls medium.
Yeah, I got a men's medium. I didn't get a girl's medium, but
don't
I got a
do
medium.
Steroids, wear smaller underwear. That's what the good kid does. Optical illusion. I'm gonna get a Sylvie Strong. I'm making Sylvie Strong underwear.
Sylvie Strong
soon.
Undies?
Yeah. Sylvie Strong undies with his little guy's picture right there on the front.
All right.
What?
So, anyway, my shirt's on its way.
I'm here to support.
If you
speaking of support, huh? Come on.
Sylvie on your underwear. So if you want to buy a shirt, and we encourage all the listeners and all the fans, buy a shirt because all the proceeds are going to the V Foundation. It's a great foundation. Every dime that the V Foundation raises goes directly to cancer research, and that's very important. It's touched a lot of us here so much. Sylvie's battling it now. You know, everything that's happened with Yurk and JD and family members they've lost recently. Freddie Huebner, I mean, it's just it affects everybody. And as a big family here at ESPN 1000, it's touched us, unfortunately, a greater extent than any of us would like to admit in these last five to seven years. So please buy your shirt, obviousshirts.com. It's obviousshirts.com, and you can buy the shirt with the logo that Mason made, Sylvie's oldest son. You can buy the more professional looking one. I no disrespect to Mason, but he's 6 years old, so it doesn't look quite the same as the more professional graphic designers.
He's an artist, kid.
It is pretty good, I got to admit.
It's what he sees.
He draws better than me, and I'm 43, and I couldn't have done that good. So. Are done that well. So buy your shirt, obviousshirts.com. And I don't even know. I didn't hear Sylvie give an update in the last couple of days. But, I mean, as of last week, I mean, like the amount of money already. In the first day, it was like they sold over 1,000 shirts. You know, that was almost 2 weeks ago, I feel right. Like, right? Yeah, and they sold 1,000 shirts in the first day. So it's been the response has been tremendous. And we encourage everyone to go to obviousshirts.com and buy a shirt. Tom Ricketts talked with Jesse Rogers. Tom is, you know, kind of making the rounds. He wants everybody to know that they are in dire straits here, I guess, right? It's a very tough situation for the MLB owners, billionaires that they are. They don't have money.
Yeah.
And I totally understand that just because their franchise is valued at something, that doesn't mean they have that liquid sitting around. They don't have $3 billion in cash sitting around. I very much understand that. But they normally buy these teams. They're very highly leveraged. They buy these teams with an eye on appreciation, right, over the long haul.
Does he want sympathy? What is he looking for? Empathy? Understanding?
A little bit of all of that?
I'm going to listen to it, and then I'm going to tell you what I think at the end of it all.
Okay. I'll read you some of the highlights
here.
This is from Jesse's article at ESPN.com. Here's something I hope baseball fans understand, Ricketts said. Most baseball owners don't take money out of their team. They raise all the revenue they can from tickets and media rights. They take out their expenses. Then they give the money left over to the GM to spend. I'm glad that he says most baseball owners, because if he said all of them, you know it's full of crap already. We all know the teams right off the top of our heads that do not take their revenue, deduct expenses, and then give the rest to their GM. That's a joke.
Yep.
I mean, give me a break. So at least he doesn't say all. He says most. So I guess, you know, maybe he's right there. He goes on to say that the league itself does not make a lot of cash. I think there's a perception that we hoard cash and we take money out, and it's all sitting in a pile that we've collected over the years. Well, it isn't, because no one anticipated a pandemic. No one expects to have to draw down on the reserves from the past. Every team has to figure out a way to plug the hole. Ricketts was asked if teams worth billions collectively should simply take loans out or find other ways to pay the cost of paying players in 2020, even if it's without fans. Ricketts said the scale of those losses across the league is biblical. The timing of the work stoppage,
everybody's talking about the Bible.
Lots of Bible lately. Yeah. The timing of the work stoppage, the inability to play was right before the season started. We're looking at 30 teams with zero revenue. To cover the losses, all teams have gone out and borrowed. There's no other way to do it in the short run. In the long run, we may be able to sell equity to cover some of the losses, but that's in the long run. Who would invest at the moment? Then Jesse asked him about Scott Boras's comments, because in Boras's email to some of his clients, or to all of his clients, he specifically referenced the Ricketts and their expenditures to buy up property around Wrigley Field and own as much as they can in and around the ballpark. Boras doesn't have any insight into our balance sheet. And as we've been investing in the ballpark, we've been spending more on the field. We've been one of the top spenders in the league while we were fixing up Wrigley Field. We don't take money out of the team. Most owners don't. We're investing in the future of the club and the current team on the field. Let's remember, a lot of those expenses were old expenses, too. The money into new expenses in free agents the last couple of years has not been very considerable. One avenue, which is still a favorite of executives, Jesse writes, is to share the risk-reward with the players. The proposal didn't make it to the offer table, leading some to wonder if it was just a red herring. Instead, the owners proposed a sliding pay scale, which was quickly rejected. Ricketts said that revenue sharing ultimately is what other leagues do. And he said, quote, they create a sense of partnership with the players because a rising tide lifts all the boats. It's always been considered something that the MLBPA doesn't want to go for because they see it as a cap. They're clear on that. I don't agree. If it's done right, it can give incentives for the players and the owners to grow the game. It could be part of the next CBA if people are willing to discuss it. So, yes, Yurko said, does he want sympathy, empathy? What is he looking for? Maybe a little bit of all that. I think he's been on the forefront, and he came up with the 70% number. Oh, our revenue, 70% depends on the gate. He's been out there promoting that because I think he does want to try to convince everyone that there's just no way they can pay these players what they're supposed to pay them without fans in the stands.
He gets none.
Year.
Sympathy, zero. The team is worth $3.2 billion. And any and all dollars that he's gotten, they've borrowed against whatever the value is, and they've utilized it to handle debt service in the past and to handle debt service that currently is there.
So why not borrow now to pay your players? When they have to borrow to buy buildings where they're going to make more money, they have no problem doing it. But to pay their players, they don't want to do it.
100% correct. They don't want to do that. Yeah. Down the line, he might sell some or part of his team when it's worth $4 billion, and then you could sell 10% of it for
$400 million,
which is more than half of what he paid for the team to begin with.
Yeah, about half. Yeah, right.
Well, yeah.
About half, right?
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, about half.
Even close to half, right?
It's close.
It's 865. You're
something
right.
Something like
yes.
That.
I had a fudgy number in
but
my
you're
brain.
But you're close,
there. Right?
You know, he could sell 10% for about half of what he bought it for.
And they've got a luxury tax anyway. You know, if you're going to do this, are you going to be able to implement? You know, are you going to make Tampa spend the kind of money that got to spend?
You'd have to, right? Wouldn't you?
But they don't. There's not a floor. They like to have a cap, but they don't want a floor.
The big flaw the MLBPA's are bargaining.
Right. They've also lied to the players a number of different times in the past, specifically saying that if you go over the cap, you give the money to teams like Pittsburgh, they will spend on contracts. You give it the money to Kansas City, they will spend on contracts. They never did.
No, they don't.
We improved our minor leagues. We improved the facilities down in the Dominican Republic. We did. We invested in our baseball. They invested in themselves is what they did. They didn't take the money they were getting from other teams to pay other players, which is what they said. You know, to the players, oh, this is how it's going to end up working. If they go over, we get them in and boom. Milwaukee never did that. At that time.
At the time. They've been better about it recently.
Cincinnati didn't do it at the time. They wouldn't utilize that money for anything else but players to make better improvements.
There are certain places that will always refuse to do it.
There's no trust between the players and management. Numbers can be fudged. They're always fudged. They always have been fudged.
Yeah, no sympathy.
The players, the football players aren't happy. They don't feel like they're walking hand in hand with the NFL. When did that BS ever come to light? Other leagues are doing this hand in hand. The NFL players aren't happy. You just tell by the vote. That thing barely passed.
Barely
passed. So you tell me everybody's happy in that league? I don't want to hear the propaganda out of Ricketts up at Wrigley Field. It's a bunch of crap is what it is.
But they continue to try to promote that message.
It's what they do, because all they do is repeat themselves over and over again.
It's what the owners have done quite successfully over the years, although there does seem to be a little bit of a changing attitude where more people understand the player's standpoint here, or at least are taking the player's side, saying they did make some concessions. They agreed to a prorated portion that they shouldn't have to take anymore. It is not the player's responsibility to bail out the owners right now. If they have to operate at a loss for a year, so be it, and they've got no problem borrowing and borrowing and borrowing when it's in their best interest, but they certainly don't want to do it now to have to pay their players, and that is not right. 312-332-3776. If you want to jump in, we will do some trending coming up next. Dave McMenamin on the NBA's potential return, which is looking more and more like it's going to happen with this 22-team format down in Orlando. He will join us coming up in about 15 minutes.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is the home of Carmen and Yurko.
Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Follow the show on Instagram at Carmen and Yurko. Follow the radio station on the gram at ESPN _ Chicago. Make sure you check out the daily stories. The noon hour is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. The housing market is heating up. It's about to really take off. Get pre-approved today in just 5 minutes. Visit thehomeloanexpert.com. Vic Fangio, the former Bears defensive coordinator, the longtime defensive coordinator in the NFL, now the head coach of the Denver Broncos, taking a little bit of heat after comments he made. Is he living in a fantasy world? Is he truly believe it? Not sure, but this is what Vic Fangio said about racism in the NFL.
I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. You know, we live in a great atmosphere. Like I alluded to earlier, we're lucky. We all live together, joined as one for one common goal, and we all intermingle and mix tremendously. You know, if society reflected an NFL team, we'd all be great.
It was another sort of turbulent offseason in a way with, general managers, coaches being hired that weren't African-American. There are not many. I mean, what, about three quarters of the league, I think, is African-American, I believe, in football. Does that sound right? I think it's upwards of
70-75%.
Something like that, right?
Yeah.
And there's only a couple of head coaches that are black. There's Mike Tomlin, of course. There's Brian Flores. There's Anthony Lynn. Who am I forgetting, guys? There are not many. You know, Ron Rivera is a minority, obviously. And so a lot of people are saying, Vic, that's tone deaf. That, now, is it a meritocracy? Well, sure. That doesn't mean that in a meritocracy there still can't be some inherent racism or some systemic racism that exists. And many people think that it does still exist in our society and, yes, in sports leagues.
Carmen, did you say Brian Flores?
I said Brian Flores.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Anthony Lynn.
Anthony Lynn, Mike Tomlin. This was Allen Robinson who had some thoughts on Vic Fangio's comments. Allen Robinson of the Bears, of course.
Good. Wondering if you were aware of the comments by Vic Fangio yesterday to his team, and if so, what you thought about it.
I am not aware of the comments about Vic, to be honest. I did not see them.
Basically, he was just saying how the NFL locker room is not like society, and if everybody would perform like in an NFL locker room, society would be much better off because you're all working towards one common goal. He didn't see race as an issue so much in NFL locker rooms, and he drew some heat for that.
I think that he has a point, because I think that the point that he probably was trying to state was just the fact that, you know, it doesn't matter big, small, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, whatever the case may be, you know, the best are put on the field for what they do and what they bring to the table to achieve one common goal. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that, you know, it's not looking at to see the color of somebody's skin or this or that, or whatever the case may be. It's about looking at that person and evaluating that person as a person, you know, and what they bring to the table as a human being. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with their skin, you know? So, again, I would have to go back and read the quote that he said, but I mean, for the gist of it that I took from, you know, I don't think that it was negative or anything like that. You know, I think that he's just saying that, you know, in the locker room, guys are evaluated for who they are as people and as players and character wise. And I think the last thing, you know, is the color of their skin that's being evaluated.
So this is probably pretty nuanced. Like I said, is it truly a meritocracy in the NFL?
I mean, again, the quote was in the locker room.
Right.
Players.
Yeah.
Within the players, the meritocracy is the best play and survive and stay.
Most of the time.
And Allen Robinson agreed with that.
Yeah.
Allen Robinson didn't find a major controversy.
Well, he also didn't hear the comments. It would have been nice if, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to hear.
And he's going to go back and hear them.
Yeah.
But we heard it here.
Yes.
You and I heard it here. Now, you want to talk about front office, Carm? You want to talk about ownership?
Ownership, yeah.
Well, then let's have a different conversation.
I think that's where it's very.
I'm with you. Let's go. Head coaches, coordinators within the league.
I think that's where it very much does exist, unfortunately. Does it not exist in the locker room?
I'll tell you how it works. Again, the best play. The best make the team. Unless you were a first-round pick And guess what? You're going to end up playing no matter what. No matter what color you are, you're a first-round pick.
You're going to play no matter what.
Somebody's invested money in you, and they've invested time, and they invested their reputation in you. And guess what? You're going to end up playing in there.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to talk about coaching staffs? It's different. Carm, I'm more than happy to sit here and discuss that with you. We can discuss that all day. Front offices? You want to talk about front offices? Let's do it.
I mean, you lived in a locker room, though, for 10 years, and you also played in the locker room 30 years ago.
Right.
But, I mean, did you truly feel like...
To me, it was beautiful.
Yeah?
To me, it was wonderful.
And it didn't really matter what...
The best played.
Yeah.
And if you weren't good enough, people knew, and then eventually you got replaced. And it didn't matter what the color of the skin of the individual was. If he was better, he played.
But is the best playing mean that there doesn't exist within that locker room?
Could
people,
be.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Could
like
be.
Who still don't have
Carm,
racist
100%
views.
Could be.
Yeah.
I'm that not you, one to believe always... every individual doesn't have the ability to be a racist.
Yeah.
I believe every person in the world has the ability if they want to be racist. They do. But intelligent people are cognizant enough to realize and to be able to judge on an individual basis every single day what needs to be done and what should be done.
Yeah. Or like sometimes we all can make, or everybody can still make biased decisions, unfortunately. Like I think that's what you're getting at, and I would agree with you that that exists very much still.
Reggie White and I always had an argument. Reggie told me black people couldn't be racist.
Yeah, I would think that.
And I said, how? Yeah. Why? If you discriminate,
I would have loved to see this argument.
If you discriminate against somebody based on the color of their skin, even if they're white, is that not racist? So Reggie and I used to go back and forth, and then Sean Jones, he's a smart guy. So Sean Jones would be on the other side; he'd be saying stuff. Then I'd be getting stuff from the other direction across the. I just asked a simple question.
They'd be ganging up on you.
They said they couldn't depend. What was his theory? He said there's no way they couldn't because. And I don't have it down exactly now, so I'm not going to try to paraphrase Reggie. But Reggie and I had spirited conversations, and we're in the defensive line room, and you travel together, and we're in the defensive line room. And it was my brother that GD'd Reggie White
that's right.
on the field, and I had to make a decision. His blood thicker than water, you know? So, discussions are great. I love having discussions. But, you know, Vic Fangio, for what he said for the players in the locker room, the ultimate meritocracy, where the best play, regardless of color of skin, that's the truth. Now, if you want to get into decisions that are made in coaching staffs and front office and the way this is going to happen,
that's
a discussion that has been had. It always needs to be had.
That
they
could
try
be the
to address
issue.
It in the off season.
Right.
I will tell you, there are more black coaches now.
Coordinators and such?
Well, not coordinators and coaches, positional coaches, than I believe there have been ever. If I had to guess. And then over the course of time, you end up working through. Mel Tucker was here as a coordinator. Yep. He got a college head football job. So I want to – listen, you're heading in the right direction, but it's always about how fast does it happen.
Yeah.
Is it happening fast
enough?
And is
the NFL still not reacting fast enough at a much higher level than the locker room?
There you go.
And that, I think, is still a very serious and genuine issue in the NFL.
It's a pertinent discussion. I could be a coach, but I didn't want to coach. Why? I didn't want to travel all the time.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be away from my family. I didn't want to move my family every 3 years. You look at these coaches' resumes in Wikipedia, Carm, and you look at it, and it's every Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Every 3 years.
It's a Johnny Cash song. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere. And I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, every few years.
It takes a certain special type of individual to want to coach and go all over the country all the time and move nonstop.
The NBA's plan to return. We'll break down the very latest with Dave McMenamin from ESPN.com when we come back next. We'll be back in 2 minutes.